Pirate's Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way. No.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk from 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Friday. Hour number three begins right now. 251-343-0106. If you want to be in touch with the show, all you got to do is text me. Let me know what is on your mind. Still to come on the program, about 30 minutes or so from now, we'll hear from our senior United States Senator, Tommy Tuberville. He'll be with us, so you want to stay tuned for that. He's also the Republican gubernatorial nominee. That's in about a half hour. Joining us now, he's our returning champion and kind to be very flexible today, but State Senator Chris Elliott is on the line with us. Senator, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well. Always happy to accommodate Coach Tuberville.
Well, we really appreciate that. It was just how you had to kind of schedule it this morning. You made some news, the Jimmy Buffett Bridge. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, John Sharp and I were talking about, I think, flock cameras the other day, and he kind of slipped one in there. He said, you know, what do you think the bridge ought to be named? And I said I thought it ought to be named after Jimmy Buffett. I mean, I thought that would be a great way to get many of our visitors that use that bridge in the mood and make folks smile and be happy. I don't know anybody that doesn't like Jimmy Buffett, he certainly got deep roots here in the coast and on both sides of the bay. Heck, the whole Upper Gulf Coast. And so anyway, it just seems to make sense to me.
Well, it certainly caught a lot of eyes. The discussion about naming the bridge just seems a tad premature.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, there's so much work to still be done on this project. I'm ready to get started on it. I hope we'll see a groundbreaking here in the next couple of months, certainly before the end of the Ivy administration, and get rolling on that. And then we can talk about naming this thing for another 5 years, if we want to. It just was a little bit of whimsy, but, certainly, like you said, it's caught a lot of eyes and got a lot of attention. People seem to really like the idea.
The aforementioned flock camera issue seems to have bumped data centers off the front page, at least here in Alabama. I know this was I was listening to Senator Orr talk about this on Amy Beth and Allison's podcast. Y'all were kind of headed to the curb in the Alabama State Senate 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, a little bit. And Senator Orr deserves a lot of that credit. You know, he is the kind of pensive, you know, thoughtful leader we need on an issue like this, because there are real concerns, not just about, you know, public safety, and the gathering of this data, right, and the privacy concerns that go along with it. But who is housing that data? Where is that data being housed? Who's controlling it? Are they monetizing it? What are they doing with it, et cetera? And so we've taken some steps in the right direction, but we need to do some more. And this is one of those wide ranging issues that really you need to take the public safety side of things and the privacy side of things and figure out where the compromises are, because there are benefits on and costs on both sides.
Yeah, and well, it does seem to be the populist issue of our time. And, you know, I would, my audience isn't real life necessarily, and neither is Facebook or whatever, but I mean, there's just people who are just vehemently anti-flock camera and don't want that part of, you know, the law enforcement apparatus at all.
Well, I've certainly read that and seen that. And as you point out, it is the issue du jour. I wonder what we'll be talking about in the month, because we'll have moved on to something else by then. But it is a real issue. Just like this conversation about data centers is a real issue. What we in the legislature need to be really careful about, though, is not making law, right, changing statute too quickly necessarily because something got exciting on Facebook for a moment, right? We need to take a step back, understand the issues, think about them, again, pensively, and set policy that protects the public, and not necessarily policy that is a knee-jerk reaction to something that's posted on social media.
Well, I mean, that happens a lot. But, you know, maybe it's different this time. The data center discussion seemed to be really hyper-fueled by it being an election cycle. And, you know, you're doing campaign events and town halls, and then you got 20, 30 people in the audience upset about a solar farm or a data center. So does this have, you know, will this be something you think that will get attention next session?
I think it will get attention next session, whether or not we'll come up with a comprehensive policy solution in that short amount of time is probably doubtful. And that's a good thing, right? You don't want to start changing the rules on business, and especially businesses like this that are making huge investments. But you want to take time to drive policy in a constructive way, in a thoughtful way, and not in a knee-jerk way, again, because you're looking at something that, hey, all too often is being driven on Facebook, which uses data centers, using some AI-generated cartoon, right? It's been done by data centers. You know, and Coach Tuberville has a good point, too, about, you know, foreign actors getting in this market. And as we have proliferation of data centers, which is absolutely going to happen, whether that's in the United States or elsewhere, do we want to have the Chinese controlling that very same data, or do we want that, you know, housed here on shore? And so these are all good questions and discussions to have, and where they're going on right now. I just am very wary of a knee-jerk reaction that causes us problems later on down the road.
How far down the data center track have we gone? It sounds like, you know, this sort of showed up out of nowhere, but a lot of the plans for these facilities have been long in place, have been, you know, the permitting has gone on. And then somebody somewhere said, whoa, but we've kind of let the toothpaste out of the tube to some degree.
Well, certainly. I mean, it was a business function that was going on. It was, you know, private property being bought and sold, and it's a normal, usual, customary, you know, business transaction, and it didn't affect anybody. It was out of sight, out of mind, and everybody was like, oh, there's a building going up over there. Okay. Where it came to be an issue was with power and water, right? And so there was all this, you know, dramatized attention on power and water. And then what did we find out? Well, the water issue is really not an issue, right? If you dig into it, it's not really a water usage issue. Do they use water? Yeah, but they also reuse the water that they use. So it's not like it's draining the aquifer or something like that. The big issue comes, in my mind, around power and how we're getting power to them, who's paying for the infrastructure to provide the power, and making sure that the ratepayers aren't being burdened with a commercial enterprise that's housing that. So we've done some of that already, and we're going to continue to work on that in concert with power generation, power suppliers, and frankly, the end user themselves.
Well, do you think, you know, the power grid in Alabama, I was thinking about this, you know, we don't have brownouts like they do in some of these other states nearby. Tennessee, Texas come to mind when they have the cold snap, a really brutal cold snap. That we seem to be okay, but there's a lot of consternation out there about utility rates, and I know the PSC has changed, and we're going to get a handle on that. But like, just the whole idea of power generation and really having like the most efficient marketplace, and you start to address some of those concerns, maybe some of these power concerns on these data centers goes away.
Exactly. And that's it. Are people scared of the data centers, or are they scared of the water issue, or are they scared of the power issue? I think you've hit the nail on the head. They're scared of the power issue. And so you have to figure out what is that really an issue? And I think the answer is yes, right? They're large consumers of power. And then, as you say, can the power generation companies handle that? What does that look like in their future? Right? Is this a 10-year customer, a 20-year customer, a 50-year customer? And I would suggest that this is probably a 20-year customer. If you're counting on technology not to change dramatically in 50 years, go look 50 years back and see what it looked like. And so, you know, you don't want to build 50-year infrastructure for a 20-year customer. And then you got to look at how does this affect the market, right? And the ratepayers. And so I think there needs to be, this is my opinion, there need to be more requirements for these folks to produce their own power, and maybe not rely so heavily on the public grid or the grid that's managed by the Public Service Commission. And so those are the things that that I think we need to look at. And I think we're headed down that general direction to provide some real solutions to what people are actually concerned about, not the boogeyman that you see again on social media.
This is such a great point. Where are we 20 years from now as data storage becomes more compact, as it becomes you don't need big giant data centers? Maybe you're able to do it much more efficiently, as has been the case through this technology wave in our history right now. We build these big giant data center campuses and they're springing up everywhere. 20 years, what happens? And I think 20 years sounds like a long way out, but it's not. I mean, what were you doing 20 years ago, Senator? You probably can recall if you look back and, I remember that day. That seems like, here we are, we're going to do this. There's sort of this hurry up with getting these things online and on board. And then later on, it may look like an old Rust Belt car manufacturing facility in Michigan somewhere.
That's exactly right. And that's and listen, they're planning on that too, right? 20 years ago, we were using floppy disks and we were starting to get accustomed to this thing called a jump drive, right? Nobody uses those anymore. And so, I think in 20 years, these companies know that whatever they're building now is probably going to be obsolete. They've built that into their plan. I just want to make sure that as a public utility, the public utilities are not trying to build out, 50-year infrastructure for a 20-year plan.
Yeah. So, and then you got to figure out what you're going to do with these spaces, and you built all this power and sewage and water infrastructure up. And it's just it's a dormant building that, there's got to be looking ahead. Well, what are we going to do with this later on? Is there another use? I know this is a hard question 20 years from now, but I just that has to be a part of the reasoning here.
Well, it does. And those are market questions. And again, those folks that are investing in these data centers, they figured that answer out. This thing is either, this asset's either depreciated to zero by the time we get there, or they figured out another use. My concern is I don't want ratepayers impacted negatively. I don't want the public utilities, investing in infrastructure that is beyond that window of usefulness, to where they're left holding the bag on all of this infrastructure that is really, frankly, not all that useful anymore. And so those are all these, whether we're talking about flock cameras or data centers, these are all the types of questions we need to take a step back, think about, and not be quite so reactionary on the Facebook about it or whatever the kids are using now, and take a break and take a breath and figure out real solutions to real problems.
Well, last question, we'll get you out of here. Well, what comes first, the downfall of the data center industry or the I-10 Mobile River Bridge Bayway?
I actually think we'll see a bayway before we will see the data center industry become obsolete. So that's some good news. I'm excited that it's back moving forward. It's not perfect. I don't love every aspect of it, but it's going to get done, and it's going to get done soon.
Senator, we always appreciate your time. We'll do it again next week. Thanks for being flexible today.
Thanks so much for having me. Enjoy your conversation with Coach.
All right. State Senator Chris Elliott there. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. You look into my eyes and lie those pretty eyes, and pretty soon I'm wondering.
To get up, life will take you back down one day.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Friday morning. Programming note coming up.
With John Young raises the bar.
I do not accept mental illness.
There we go. Coming up Monday on the program, we'll hear from, we'll kick it off with Jennifer Fidler, I think, will be with us, one of our Monday regulars. Dale Jackson from WVNN in Huntsville. And then our Republican nominee for Secretary of State, Caroline Dobson, will join the program as well. So that's on the Monday slate. Once again, 251-343-0106. If you will need to be in touch with the show, that's how you do. So I'm going to try to get through these texts real quick before we get to Coach here. Just a moment. Unless he paid for the project, no public infrastructure needs to be named after an entertainer. If named after anyone, needs to be named after someone who has done service for the state and our country, like Jeff Sessions, for example. Mike, compromising on privacy and personal freedoms for public safety and making cops' jobs easier is a step directly to tyranny and authoritarianism. This has been warned against since the founding of our nation and a state. Unnamed texter, need to tell Tuberville there sure is a lot of Doug Jones signs around Springfield, kind of Spring Hill, kind of scary. Add Midtown to that. Also, Doug Jones signs everywhere. Same is true in Fairhope, by the way. A name texter. Rick, I hope everyone who invested in the data center goes bankrupt. We have these technological advances, and I think there's going to be a time when data storage is these big, costly, utility-consuming data centers are going to be obsolete. And, you know, I don't know what that trajectory is, how fast, but today will come. And we'll laugh at it. It'll be like 8-tracks and, you know, these DVDs or whatever. The data will be much more compact over time. They'll figure it out. Someone says Buffett Bridge. Yes. Well, Jimmy Buffett, I like if they polled it. And I'm not talking about one of these online polls. But if you seriously did like a scientific survey by phone or whatever, where would Donald Trump and our Jimmy Buffett line up on the naming of the bridge? Now, like I said, I told Senator Elliott this. I think this discussion's way, 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 way premature. And, you know, in the end, you may not want your name on this. Rick writes, it's called a quantum computing. Yeah, so, but think about, like, how we're moving heaven and earth in rural Alabama, which is a very vulnerable place. They just, any kind of economic opportunity, a better way of life. And these big tech companies, hey, please, please let us build a data center in your county or whatever. And then the next technological breakthrough, hey, we could store this much data in 10% of the space needed. Not that you would have these big, giant, for example, I don't know, manufacturing facilities, and it becomes your source of well-being, your biggest employer, because the data centers don't employ a lot of people. They create a lot of construction jobs, and then those jobs go away. But it, you just have in the, you know, on the hillsides and then on the landscape, these hollowed out old facilities where once stood a bunch of servers. What do you do with them? And I don't have the answer to that, but I do think this, if we're going to allow this, what will be your plan? What are you going to do to remediate this? What are you going to do with this when you're done? I mean, this is a public policy question 20 years from now. If you want to build here, and for whatever reason it's allowed, if you should vacate the premises, and the valuation goes to zero, what are you going to do? Are you going to leave it there? You going to let the public have to deal with it? Think about that. Maybe that's a bigger issue that we're really thinking about right now than the short term. 251-343-0106. We will return. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. I've done it many times. Somebody take me home. Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Friday morning, or what's left of it. 251-343-0106. If you want to be in touch with the show, all you got to do is text me. Joining us now on the line, for now, he's our senior United States Senator, candidate, Republican nominee for governor, I should say. But Tommy Tuberville is with us. Coach, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. How you doing, Jeff?
Doing well, doing well. It's been a little bit, but everything going well, I assume.
Yep, staying on. You know, we're on recess in D.C., so all around the state every day, working from corner to corner and just going out and talking to people about, most people want to talk about the SAVE Act and things that the federal government, we can't get done. We want to talk about NIL, but it's good. You know, people are getting, I think, more into voting. You know, the last couple of sessions of voting, the turnout was very, very small. And people just need to realize, you know, if you want to make a difference in government, you got to get out and vote and use what your rights are. And I think we'll have a much better turnout come November.
Well, yeah, turnout's been lackluster, but there's some hopeful signs here and there. I thought the way Florida came out, 500,000 more Republicans for the Republican slate than the Democrat slate. So there are some hopeful signs. Hey, but before we get too far into the politics, how you feeling about football season coming up?
Well, it's good that it's here now. You don't know what to expect with all this NIL and all the transfer as you and I visited about earlier before we went on, about all these players in the NFL now saying we're just going to go back to college. It doesn't look good for us in the NFL. We're just going to go back and play college football. And it's sad to see the rules have just gone out the door. And what's happened is we're denying now high school football athletes chances to play or get a scholarship because they're going to players that decide, hey, we'll just play 5, 6, 7 years. And it's totally wrong, but we got to get control of it somehow. But I don't know how we do it. I've tried to get things passed, and we've pushed hard for new eligibility rules, new transfer rules, Jeff. But at the end of the day, it's hard to get enough votes, especially the Democrats. They want to unionize all athletes, and there's no way we're going to do that.
Yeah, and the money is going to create these disparities, I suppose. And how long will it remain a viable, profitable thing if you have 5-10 teams that are just going to dominate every year?
Yeah, the Ohio States and the Texases that are now over $50 million a year paying players. You're just buying a football team. That's what you're doing, and it's unfortunate. But I think and I told the president this: we just do one thing. Just don't worry about the NIL. The money's going to be there. But if you would just create a situation where you only have 5 years to play, and after that fifth year, you can't come back no matter what. No, I don't care what a federal judge says or anybody. And you can only transfer one free time. Normally, we don't have any free transfer, but give them one free transfer. Coach leaves or death in the family, that's fine. Do it for the right reasons. But we have to put academics back into this. But it's turning into minor league NFL. And if you look at the college basketball, and I spend a lot of time talking to basketball coaches, John Calipari is really on top of this, is all they're signing now is these international players. There's no high school kids getting college scholarships in basketball anymore. They're going and signing these 22, 23-year-old kids and are men in these international leagues that want to come to the United States and make money. It's ruining what we had created as an atmosphere where kids had an opportunity to get a great education and also further their athletic career by coming to a university in America if you're a high school kid in this country.
Yeah, well, and all these opportunities and then the other sports that aren't revenue producing, I got to think it would have some kind of impact on that as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've got to save women's sports, and it's in trouble if we continue down this path. There's not going to be any funding for it. And then, of course, you know, we have this bill out there, and it's getting better. We put some things in, and it really crosses the line putting federal government too far in charge of college sports. But it probably not going to make it. We'll probably vote on it here in a couple of weeks when we get back. The problem is they still will not say men can't play in women's sports. And that's the game. That's a deal breaker right there for us in the Republican side and really all Americans across the country that's got really understand what's going on. We can't allow men to get into women's sports. And you're seeing it happening more and more right now. And I'm really glad that you got a lot of young women coming out, this Cunningham and, you know, some of these WNBA players. But I tell you, they're getting trashed for it. And who would have ever thought that you would get beat down by Americans that really want men to play in women's sports? It's crazy.
Yeah, it's just, you know, and violating all these, you know, cultural norms that have been in place for thousands of years. And now it's taboo to be on the wrong side of that. We're joined by Tommy Tuberville here on the program. Coach, a lot of news down here on this bridge. You know, you assumed the governor's role. What do you think about Barry Moore, Senator Elliott down here? Have some ideas about naming the bridge, but what do you make of all of it?
Oh, first of all, we got to have the bridge. And I've spent a huge amount of time the last 2 years on this, and it should have been built 20 years ago. But we just had people just kick the can down the road and couldn't get people on the same page. Well, we finally did it. We finally got it. And a huge part of it was because of a guy that really loved the state of Alabama. And just in his first year and a half of being president for his second term, President Trump, he's given the economy in the state of Alabama about $10 billion, $10 billion. And it is just, he's been awesome. Now, I saw where some people were saying, let's name it after Jimmy Buffett, or somebody said President Trump. It makes no difference. I mean, this is not a President Trump. It's not a deal breaker for him. He could care less. He's trying to help us out. So let's let the people that will make that decision will be the legislatures when they go into session here in a few months. But again, we're 4 years down the road of having this thing built. So let's get it built first, and then we'll worry about who to put their name on it. But again, it's just a blessing that President Trump has given us opportunity to do it, because $3.6 billion is a lot of money that we don't have. That obviously is going to be paid some by the taxpayers, but also going to come from the goodness of President Trump's heart, because he understands we really need it. And Katie and I have been really pushing this now for the last 2 years, and we finally got across the goal line.
You feel pretty good about the plan the Governor Ivey has gotten through. The toll authority greenlit it to do the toll and all of the financing. And now we've been down this path before. And in 19, it got disrupted, but does it seem like this is the direction we're going to go?
Yeah, I think everybody's on board now. The commission on both sides of the bridge, on Baldwin County and in Mobile County, you got everybody to agree to it. Again, it's going to be a toll. I hate tolls, but you can't build anything now without a toll. The cost is just enormous, and it's going to be a lot cheaper on people that are Alabama residents than it is on people come from out of state. It's a national security threat. We got to have it. President Trump, that was one of the main reasons that he stepped in and said, enough's enough. We're going to build this thing. And so I think the funding is going to be there. Again, it's in two phases. You got the Bayway, but the first thing that will be built will, other than the Bayway, we're going to three lane that, but it'll just be striping because it's wide enough to do that. And then, of course, the bridge. And it's, I've talked to the contractors, the people in charge. I think it's going to be awesome. It will really move the traffic on. And eventually we're going to have to three lane past the Bayway over all the way to the state line in Florida, because when that traffic continues to pick up, we have more and more traffic. You're going to have some traffic jams if you go from a three to a two lane over on the Baldwin County side. So there's a lot of things we got to look at, but the thing we got to do is we got to get that bridge and we got to get away from those tunnels.
Coach, beyond just the bridge, and you assume that role as governor, like I said, you know, there's a lot of things that need to be done around Alabama regarding roads and bridges. We've been repaving a lot in the last 5 years, but do we start going in a different direction, you think, once you're governor?
Yeah, we've already started a plan of what we're going to do. We started about a year and a half ago, Jeff, of what we need first, the priorities. And of course, everybody puts pavement down, but we got to build different roads. We got a three lane 65 and 85. You know, we're getting more and more traffic from the north. We got to do a lot better job on some of the smaller roads and some of the bridges. You know, we have 2,000 bridges in our state that are condemned and we're still driving over them, and we have not done nothing to them. And so we'll put a total plan together of what we need to do first, what we're going to do month by month. You know, we spend a lot of money on roads and bridges. That's one of the biggest budgets that's in the state government. But we've got to use it the right way, and we've got to take care of them. You know, we've got a lot of things going on with some of the bypasses. We need to build some new bridges in some areas to overcome some of the trains. We're going to have more and more train traffic over the years, because we're trying to get the big trucks off the road and use trains to get stuff from the port, for instance, all the way up to Huntsville or over to eastern part of the state. So there's a lot of things that we've got to do to make sure we continue to make the traffic move. The one thing I want to do is we're going to grow the state. We're going to have more manufacturing. But how do you do that? You do that by ensuring of transportation, energy, and water. We're going to use our waterways more. We're going to redo some of the lock and dams. We're going to put more traffic on Tom Bigby, the Warrior, Alabama River. And then, of course, we're going to make sure that if we have an opportunity to make sure we continue our train traffic, but also increase it, because we've got a chance here with the future of the trains of really taking advantage of the port and getting things out of the port, but keeping it off of our four and six lane roads to make sure we just have more cars instead of more trucks going up and down the roads.
Yeah. And when I was growing up, the Tom Bigby waterway was such a big deal. And then it just sort of, you know, you didn't really hear as much about that, but it, you know, connecting the Tennessee River to the port down here. And, you know, I guess there's the opportunity there to do more with some of the waterways in this state.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt. We've got more running water in the state of Alabama than any other state. We got to take advantage of it. Tom Bigby's one. Again, that's how we got that Hadrian plant moved up to Muscle Shoals. President Trump gave it to us. We'll create thousands of jobs making submarines next to the Tom Bigby. We'll make a part of it, put it on a barge, and we'll barge it down to the port and ship it all the way around to New Hampshire where they finish out the submarines. We got a huge plan. We just got to continue to get the funding from President Trump, which he's given it to us, but take advantage of the water that we have. And again, it's not just the Tom Bigby. It is all the waterways in the state that we've got to use more and more and have a plan for it.
Coach, let's talk about this sort of national politics, but the trend on the Democrat side and this kind of slow creeping socialism. You know, a lot of these candidates are starting to win. It used to be kind of a fringe movement.
We've gone through it in this country before. Maybe you'd have a candidate win, but no one thought much of it. But people are more and more kind of embracing this ideology, and I think that's problematic long term.
Yeah, it's scary. It really is to see that a lot of these people in some of these states are just downright communist. And the problem is there's no Democrats anymore. You have some Democrats say they are, but if you vote Democrat, you're voting more for socialism and communism because that's the party that they live in now. And it hadn't gotten into Alabama as much as it's gotten into some places like Michigan or Illinois or some of the northern states, but it's coming to us if we don't watch it, and we've got to fight back. We got to understand that, you know, if you were a Democrat 10 years ago, now you should be a Republican because you actually even believed in the country back then if Democrat. Well, these Democrats now won't change it. They won't change the country to socialism, communism, write everybody a check, big government, higher taxes, and give these crazies a chance to just absolutely control through a different type of government. No constitution. I've seen it change in just the 6 years I've been in Washington, D.C., and we fight it every day. But I tell you, we got to really be careful in our educational systems that I think a lot of this is coming from there, these places that you get some of these professors on some of these campuses, and they're preaching this indoctrination instead of teaching academics. And it's just unfortunate. So we in the South, not just Alabama, have got to keep more of an eye on what's going on, because we'll be the last one standing if we don't watch it, and then it'll even consume us. But we have to fight back. We have to understand we live in a constitutional republic that is built on a set of laws that have been with us 250 years, and we're a Judeo-Christian country. We're, you know, there's no religion talked about in terms of Christianity when it comes to Democrats anymore. They've just basically washed their hands of it. And so we've got to make sure we understand where we came from and where we're headed. And it's a scary time in our country. It really is.
Last question, we'll get you out of here on this. And this is kind of related, but election outlook, and I think personally it's going to be really linked to gas prices or affordability or whatever, but you see relief coming, and do you see that maybe helping Republicans in November?
Yeah, what people don't realize, and again, I was right in the middle of it for the last 6 years, when Joe Biden opened up those borders and we allowed 20 million more illegals to come in, which probably put us somewhere around 40 million illegals in this country. It took away a lot of jobs. It's taken a lot of housing and run housing costs up. It's run insurance up. It has caused taxes to go up. It's caused food prices to go up. And a lot of it's because those borders were open. People don't realize the amount of people that come in here. All of a sudden, there were less products. People were having to pay more, because that's what happens when you have less products on the shelf and gasoline. It's just unfortunate now, this Iran war, and President Trump knows that this Iran war has caused prices to go up in terms of gas. But, you know, I can remember Joe Biden, the oil was $120 a barrel and gas was $4 a gallon. I don't understand the significance now when it's $80 a barrel and it's somewhere close to $4 a gallon. It doesn't make sense to me why prices haven't gone down on gas. But again, that's up to the people that work in the energy business. But again, 40 million people being here that shouldn't be here, that's causing a lot more problems in our food supply, energy supply, housing supply. And it was all caused by the Biden administration. And President Trump's trying to get it straightened out, but you can't do it in a year and a half. Let's give him another 2.5 years and see what he can do.
Coach, we always appreciate your time. Let's do it again real soon, and best of luck out there.
All right, yeah, thank you.
Tommy Tuberville, ladies and gentlemen, we got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Almost goodbye. I've been
There was sun through the blinds this morning.